Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
While Ireland remains one of Europe's youngest countries, yesterday's census results confirm a pattern of change. The average age of the population is rising. There was a massive 26% increase in the number of people aged over 70, but a fall in the number aged between 25 and 39. So, as the number of older and retired people grows and the number of people at work falls, what does all that mean for our economic future? And in particular, the funding of pensions and social care. Well, joining me to discuss the findings are Michael Taft, Research Officer with the Union SIPTU, and Tony Foley, who's Emeritus Associate Professor of Economics at DCU. And thank you both for joining us this morning. Tony, first to you, the census figures, they tell us something that we already knew, really, but the big question they raise is, how do we continue to pay the pensions of our ageing population?
Yeah, that's the big issue. Like, there's nothing new in terms of the figures, except obviously we have the figures. If you go back to 2018, we had population projections up to 2051, which identified this problem. The government has been concerned with pensions for years, and in 2019 issued its roadmap for pension reform. So the issue has been around for a long time, and the headline sort of discussion point tends to be the age of the state pension. But there's a lot of other things besides the state pension. So, for example, you've got the notion of auto enrolment for people who basically work in private enterprise, wouldn't get a civil service or an occupational pension, trying to increase the number of people who save for pensions. So there's recognition that we have an issue in terms of pensions. And the issue is, exactly as you said, we're going to have a lot more pensioners. We'll have more pensioners per worker. At the moment, for example, we have five workers per 65 plus person. In about 25 or 30 years, we'd have two workers per 65 plus person. And at the moment, a lot of the funding for the state pension is through the PRSI. So at the moment, we have five PRSIs paying for one pension. Eventually, we'll have two PRSIs paying for one pension. So the issue is, how do we deal with that? And there's a range of options. And one of the options, of course, is you increase the age at which you get the pension. And of course, the government has already done that in terms of that in 2014, we introduced the 65 to 66 change in the pension. And then there's been a lot of resistance to any further increases in the age. Now, you could argue that we have choices, and the choices are we increase taxes and we just pay for increased numbers of pensions from tax, whether it's on workers, whether it's on rich people, whoever, whether it's a wealth tax or whatever. Secondly, we just increase PRSI payments, so we increase the amount of money each worker pays to go into the pension fund. And thirdly, we go the other way and we reduce the entitlement to pensions from whether it's 70 or 68. We have to do some of those things. So I suppose we could argue that we know the facts in terms of what's going to happen. The discussive point is, how do we deal with it and how do we finance it?
Okay.
I would argue that one of the options which must be introduced, and that would be basically my basis for that, would be the change in lifestyle of people, the change in health of people, the length of time people work, is that the age would increase at which you're entitled to the state pension.
You'll make people fall off their chairs if they're sitting at their desk, maybe working from home now, to 70. Is that what you think?
Oh, yeah, I would could see that would be an issue and a policy option. At the moment, the public service retirement age has been increased to 70. And we're arguing particularly that people shouldn't necessarily be forced to go at 65. Now, maybe we'll have flexibility and options. You can go at 60 at whatever, 3/4 of a pension. You can go at 65 at 80% and you get the full pension at 70. But I think increasing the age level is one of the things that we will have to do.
Michael, Tony, I'm just going to bring Michael in here, who's listening to all of that. Michael, what do you think? No full pension until you're 70. You mightn't agree with that, but do you agree with Tony that something has to be done to pay for pensions into the future?
Yes, something has to be done. We do know that the the number of pensioners will increase, that pension expenditure will increase out to 2050. That's not the issue. What the issue is in the first instance is how much would increasing the pension age actually save? And from the submissions made by the Department of Finance, the Fiscal Council, to the Pensions Commission, it showed that it actually would save, at the end of the day, very little. It would save something like 15% of the total pension expenditure rise out to 2050. It's a very small amount, and actually the Department of Social Protection produced data which showed it would increase even less. So I think there's three approaches, broad approaches to be made, and there's others, smaller policies, but three broad approaches. The first is that that you actually allow people to work beyond the age of which they're now legally required to retire. There are lots of people who want to work beyond the age of 65 and 66, but they're legally prevented from doing so. The Pension Commission proposed a reform that would achieve that. And Tony mentioned in the public sector, people have the right to remain until the age of 70 in their work. That should be done throughout the economy so that the more people who work beyond that, and also to possibly innovate where people work beyond the age of 66, but they're allowed to reduce their hours. That keeps people in the labor force. That increases pensions.
So would they, in that case, would they be entitled to their full pension, state pension at 66?
Yes.
Okay. So what's the incentive then to keep working just because you perhaps enjoy it, you want to stay in the workforce?
That's correct. There's a lot of people who actually derive social benefit from staying in the workforce. It's a social issue. Now, for a lot of people, it certainly is an income issue. You know, people over the age of 50 who are still in the workforce, 20% of them are low paid. We have high levels of deprivation among older people. So there's an economic incentive for them to stay, but for a lot of people, it's a social reason. And so instead of coming in with this hammer saying you must only retire at the age of 70, why don't we first start with saying, actually, you are allowed to work until the age of 70. So you give a positive incentive to people.
And your other solutions?
The two other solutions is, one, we know that social insurance has to increase. Under any scenario, even with pension age increases, PSI has to increase. So therefore, we should start with the two outliers which the Commission on Pensions identified, start increasing PSI contributions from employers who are have a very low level of PSI rate compared to other European employers.
Okay, so employers, PSI.
And the self-employed, but to start to do that almost, you know, fractional increases over a 20-year period, fractional, so that people don't actually feel it from year to year, but which can, over time, accumulate.
Okay, and your last one?
The third thing is the elephant in the room. All of these projections put forward by the Department of Finance and the Fiscal Council are done against the backdrop of literally an economic drought that is going to start in 2030, where the economy essentially stagnates at 1% annual growth. All commentators have said, if we could even push up that annual growth rate by even just a small percentage, that would give the economy greater ability to generate the revenue to pay for pensions.
Okay, so the state needs to earn more money into the future.
The economy needs to earn more money, and we should be taking the policy steps that will enable the economy to do that.
But not through increased taxes on workers?
No, not on PSI, no, because actually, as it stands now, Irish employees pay a higher level of income tax in PSI than the EU average.
Okay.
They're not the outliers. The outliers are employers and self-employed.
Okay, Tony, are you convinced?
I'm not convinced with the argument that you exclude any of the options. Like Michael mentioned, 10 to 15% is the savings associated with particular age increases. 10 to 15% of a big amount of money is not to be sneezed at. The absence of that 10 to 15% imposes extra burdens on the others. And of course, it would be great if we could have continuing growth rate at much higher than 1%. But the issue arises more in terms of the more optimistic scenario you take for the future, the less need there is to do these particular things. So I think you have to be a little bit more, I suppose, pessimistic about the prospects so that you're not shocked when those issues arise. The big issue is we have to finance it. And it's a question of, as you say, for example, Michael has excluded PRSI increasing on workers. He's only increased it on employers. Naturally enough, coming from a union perspective. If that's going to carry the huge amount of the burden, well, then we're into questions of incentive and small businesses and so on. If we're going to exclude the overall tax burden on workers, and of course, we're left with a question of what's a worker. Is someone earning 100,000 a year a worker? I thought everyone who's employed is a worker. So I would think we have to do everything. I could see taxes having to go up. I could see PRSI having to go up. And I see that the pension age will have to go up. Now, it's not going to be nice politically to increase the pension age. And that might be the reason why it won't happen. But in terms of you should be looking at all the options, because in anything, if you ignore one of the options, the burden gets stronger on the rest. Just, and the easiest solution to anything is to say the other crowd should carry the burden.
Okay, just going back to what Michael said about pensions, having the choice to work later if you want, but there's no penalty there. So for people, Tony, who are unable to work past 65, and we know there are lots of professions and jobs where people simply can't go past that age, is that not a fairer way to do it, rather than saying to them, well, if you opt to quit at 65 or 66, you're not going to get your full pension?
Well, you have to establish what are you entitled to at a particular age. So if you're saying the full, at the moment the full pension is 66, you could equally argue the full pension should be 60 if we had enough money to pay for it. And we should be using some of our productivity gains and income gains to reduce that amount of time that you have to work. Now, we've already done it at the earlier age. So most people don't start working at 18. They go to college, they go to university and they start working at 22 or 23. So they're working a smaller number of years than was the case before. Now, you could argue, as I say, that that's desirable. That's the dividend from the fact that we're wealthier, as opposed to having to work your entire life and then drop dead. But it would be far better, of course, to have flexibility. You mentioned, and Michael partly answered it, what's the incentive to work beyond 66 if you are getting your full state pension? Well, first of all, lots of people don't get a state pension. I don't get a state pension because I was a public servant, so I'm not entitled to a state pension. I get my civil service pension. Equally, the state pension is not going to make you rich. So if you're getting the pension at 66, of course, if you had the option and were able, you'd work longer to get extra money. So I think we have to be thinking of a mix of policies to do this, because it's a fairly big issue. We are going to face the facts that there's going to be a lot less workers available to provide the PRSI and the tax and so on, which would go into paying for this.
All right, gentlemen, we'll leave it there. Thank you both for joining us on that this morning. Michael Taft, SIPTU Research Officer, and Tony Foley, who's Associate Professor Emeritus of Economics at DCU. Just to go back to what we were discussing earlier, the new familicide report, and in the conversation about succession, mention was made of the Cawley Lillis case, and we just want to clarify, Eamon Lillis was convicted of the manslaughter of his wife, not murder, as was stated, and we're happy to clarify that. Now, we will take a break.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.